Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Kia ora koutou, and your local Labour MP hosting Red Alert Radio today is Jacinda Ardern. Welcome to our show. I'm a Labour List MP based in Auckland Central, and we've got a very exciting show lined up for you today. But before we kick off, I wanted to kick off with a little bit of an exciting, irrepressible track from the Drab Do Riffs. The title of the track is I'm Depressed. And that was the Drab Do Riffs with I'm Depressed. And someone who's certainly never depressed when I see him in the streets of Auckland is the wonderful Patrick Reynolds, who's joining me on the phone now. Welcome, Patrick.
Morena.
Now, I haven't given any background as to your occupation and the reason I've got you on the show, so I'm just going to give the listeners a little bit of a take. Now, Patrick is a fabulous photographer. You're likely to have seen his work across many magazines, books. He is also what I would call a commentator of sorts on transport issues. Is that a fair description, Patrick?
Yeah, there's a slightly more pretentious word I tend to use, which is urbanist. But
urbanist, and what do you mean by urbanist?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, but it means someone who is concerned and an advocate for the very sort of physical shape of the city and how that influences everybody's lives. So it's not just transport. In Auckland, you end up getting drawn into transport because it's the single most important issue that influences urban form and therefore, you know, the very fabric of our lives. But I'm not really a transit wonk or a train spotter or directly.
But one of those other derogatory terms people tend to use. Do you think this urbanist kind of, you know, title you've given yourself, has that come out of photography as a starting point?
Well, it has for me, because a big part of my practice as a photographer has been photographing the built environment as a specialist architectural photographer, and which essentially has just meant looking really, really, really hard at the built environment, and mostly in order to work out ways to try to use craft skills to improve it, of course, to make it look better than it is. But it also means, I mean, I do think I'm quite practiced at reading places, especially built places, and trying to work out why they are, and why do they work, and or why don't they work, and what we could do better is really what interests me more than anything.
Does that mean that photographing the urban environment has always been your, I guess, your genre of choice when it comes to photography?
Well, it has on one level. I mean, certainly for the day job, as it were. I mean, I am still very interested in the medium as a means of expression, but it has got this really important relationship with the world out there. You know, you do need to photograph something, and for worse or better, I've always thought the built environment was a good subject for the camera. So
that absolutely answers the bit. I do still have one question though. Yep. What is your favourite thing you've ever photographed, and is it going to be a building?
Reveal yourself, Patrick. Well, you don't photograph things. You only photograph light.
That's deep. Do you want to expand on that?
Well, light is the raw material. I mean, you don't photograph, say, a person. You photograph the light bouncing off your face. So the most exciting thing as a photographer is light. And an enormous amount of the practice is really about being incredibly attentive as possible to light and what that will mean.
So the best thing you've ever photographed wouldn't necessarily have been a static image, but rather a moment in time that had a particularly good environment around it.
I think maybe there's a different question underneath your question. Like, do you mean the best thing I've photographed, or the best photograph I've ever made, or
both? Give me two.
Yeah, they're different things, really. I mean, it is just an ongoing practice. You're always looking. You know, it's kind of like advanced looking.
Is that a course at university one can take? Advanced Looking 101.
Well, yeah, that sounds good, doesn't it?
But you still haven't answered the question, Patrick. I'm not
going to commit. I've got, you know, I've got lots of lovers. I'm not going to single one out.
Give us a range of options then.
Well, for years and years I've been photographing at a small part of the west coast of Auckland, which has very few buildings. Called Anafossa. So that's kind of, I've had a love of shooting out there.
Is that because you have a personal connection to it as well?
Yeah, I guess. But also the light is wonderful. And yes.
I've seen some of those images. They are absolutely stunning. But I want to come back in after. We're going to play a quick intermediate track. But after we come back from that song, Patrick, I really want to talk to you about your role as an urbanist. Dare I say it, a train spotter. But before you dispute me on that, let's take a quick listen to the beautiful Lady Six with her track, Like Water.
Up the door and kiss your shoulder. It felt so right. You didn't wait to act. Sacrificing it, God and God. Oh, I know, I feel it moving. You did. more than me that you can trust. Oh, I know I feel it moving.
The beautiful Lady Six with Like Water. And we're back with Patrick Reynolds, photographer and urbanist. But Patrick, we've had this conversation before about why train spotter is such a negative turn of phrase. Why do you hate being called that?
Well, it suggests that somebody who's in love with the mode for its own qualities rather than the service it provides.
You not in love with trains?
I like trains. I like cars. I mean, I like bicycles. It's not, but it isn't. It isn't really about that.
It's very non-committal of you.
Well, I mean, they are a means to an end. I mean, I am a passionate supporter, for example, of the City Rail Link, but the reasons are not because I want there to be trains, but because of the way that that will transform Auckland. Mm. So it's about what it does. The city, rather than, you know, there are means to an end.
And do you think then that the City Rail Link has the potential to be the most transformative urban design project for Auckland?
Absolutely, with the caveat that it means also to be understood that it's on top of the three big changes that Auckland Transport are already undertaking now: the integrated ticketing, the redesigned bus network, and the electrification of the existing rail network. But the City Rail Link is a killer app. Yeah, it's the transformation of Auckland from this sort of dreary, dispersed, unintense, car-dominated place. It gives it the potential to, you know, really transform, to change into a 21st-century city. And I've got this little prediction. I think there's a whole lot of people who don't understand it, who are opposed to it, have been told that it's unaffordable and things like this, that will be among the first to congratulate themselves for their sophistication when they're hopping on that train and under Albert Street and whizzing through the city.
And what do you think? So you think the conversion of people to these extra, you know, the public transport as a phenomena is making improving the network, which obviously is what the City Rail Link is intended to do. What else, though, do you think will transform approach?
Well, there's two things. Well, there's not a problem with getting people to want to use it. The problem is with it being there. The service has suffered such a lack of investment and to the point of constructive dismantlement over the last quarter of the 20th century. You know, it was basically so underinvested in that it really didn't exist, and including the bus service, which is about to have a fantastic redesign. But there's capture by special interests, there's rundown things, but there's also a zeitgeist thing at work. The big move after the Second World War was this great idea of the suburban life, the cars.
Yes, most people don't know that we pulled out our tram network in order to accommodate the car in the 50s.
Yeah, and look at the cities that didn't, like Melbourne, and how much more vibrant they are. But and it is absolutely true, it's like, say, like losing the trees from Pontry Road and Silvers Road. Once you lose an amenity, it's really hard to get it back. But we do have the opportunity, because we almost have nothing here, we can do it well in one go. You know, we can sort of leap things. But I do want to just get back to this thing that there is a huge global shift across the whole of the OECD which is kind of like a spirit of the times, a zeitgeist shift, and it comes up in every way you can quantify it. Younger people in particular are not desperate to drive around in cars. They certainly want to have their smartphones, and they want to be online, and they want to be connected with people, but they don't identify in the way that, say, people, teenagers and people in their 20s in the 1970s did. The car is not a symbol of freedom. In fact, it's a kind of image of a burden. You know, the costs associated with it are difficult for them. They don't look on a car as the road to personal happiness and success, whereas being able to get...
Unless you're from Warrenswan, it's a Holden or a really, really beautiful Ford. I guess what I'm saying, there are some places...
That love cars.
But what you're saying is that's going to become...
No one is saying we're going to rip up all the roads. It's not a question of that. It's a question of offering a choice to those who don't. And in fact, one of the great achievements of an enhanced public transport service is actually getting a whole lot of reluctant drivers off the road and out of the way of the people who are really keen to keep doing it. Yeah. So there's a huge win for car drivers. I mean, I'm always stunned by the idiocy of the AA on this issue. They don't understand that getting the nanas and the undergraduates off the roads in front of them as they swoosh by in their SUVs, you know, this doesn't have a benefit for them. They can't understand this. If they were really interested in pushing an enhanced driving experience, they would want as many alternatives to driving as to be available as possible.
And this whole notion as well of the Gen Y and the Gen X of being more... more engaged by the notion of public transport and wanting to opt for it over the ownership of a car. Do you think I managed to go and visit the models, the model rail for electrification that's down at the waterfront at the moment? You can go and check out the new mock-up of the train. Fantastic that they're talking about, making it wireless, ensuring that there's rolling, seeing whether or not they can bring rolling news through, LED screens into the train, making it a really productive time.
Yeah, certainly wireless. People want their own to choose their own news. They don't want news shoved down from, head office. They want to be online and be able to go to do what they want online.
It's a very generational thing, though, isn't it, Pat?
If I'm on my
gold card, I'm unlikely to be travelling with my iPad necessarily, am I?
Yes, you are.
But you haven't met my grandma, have you?
Well, I mean, the key thing, though, is not to generalise.
No.
I mean,
which is why wouldn't providing a range of options be advisable in the beginning?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think the key thing is that it's not a question of people wanting to take transits because they like the idea appeals to them. They'll want to take transit when it is the best choice for them, when it is the quickest, most direct. That's the point.
Cost point, the price point then matters, though, doesn't it, Patrick? Because to what extent do you think? I mean, there's some chat about whether or not the subsidies going into our public transport currently are sustainable. What's your view on that?
Well, the vast subsidies going into motorway construction certainly are not sustainable. I mean, there's $4 billion being spent on completing the Western Ring Road, which will simply, trying to solve congestion by building more road space is like throwing gasoline onto a fire. There's a vast sums of money, and the subsidies for public transport are actually pretty small in the scheme of things compared to the vast spent on duplicating existing roads, and in ways that are not examined. I mean, the modelling, I tried to get NZTA to tell me about their modelling for traffic volumes, and they're very vague about it. Either they haven't done it, or they won't tell me.
And it's a really fair point that a lot of this is just the question of priorities, and that's certainly why Labor always said that we would reprioritise the Puhoi to Wellsford into the City Rail Link. But what is your view on Council's different proposals around funding some of these massive infrastructure projects? Because the City Rail Link, for instance, have estimated a cost of, is it
The estimates are, I think the 2.86 is ludicrously high.
Yeah.
For starters, it includes buying new trains in 30 years' time, which nobody pricing a motorway accounts for the cost of the cars. Certainly never is parking. The parking infrastructure required when you stimulate more than car driving these things are not apples and apples when they compare them. The funding argument is simply a problem because we have a national structure that controls everything, and the NZTA, which is the New Zealand Transit Authority, is actually just a highway building organisation. So all of its money goes into highways, and a little tiny bit at the bottom goes into public transport subsidies. It's that imbalance that is the problem. The citizens of Auckland should not just be funding this out of property rates. It's a transit asset of national significance. It's intergenerational. I mean, the tunnels that were built in 1863 in London are still being used by tube trains. To price these over a couple of years is a ludicrous. It's just these structures that we've got.
So do you think the council's got it wrong with its consultation document on how to fund these roads out of?
No, the council hasn't got it wrong. The council has got its hands tied because it cannot access the taxes that Auckland has paid to Wellington that go into the transit, the National Transit Fund at the moment.
So are they just rolling over?
I would hope that a new Labor-Green government will change. Will make NZTA into a real transit authority, not simply a highway building agency.
So in the interim, you think council is doing the best it can with a... I mean, because should they not be pushing back?
Exactly the best thing. And the people would argue there's no point in talking about it because there's no funding for it yet. That's just an absurd argument. I mean, you should talk about all sorts of things and then work out whether we need them more than other things and then work out the funding. I mean, the funding comes last. Also, in the sort of 7-year phase till it opens, the first 3 years don't cost much. Until you actually start digging, that's when you need to spend a lot of money. Now, there's a couple of things happen over the next 3 years, and one of them, I think, is a general election. So, you know, there's a lot of good reason why Auckland Council should be proceeding with the planning and everything, because the funding situation can change, and it can change quite radically, quite quickly.
Yes, indeed it can, and I think listeners will probably know my views on that. Patrick,
I mean, what we want, really, simply, is that all major transport investment ideas are evaluated equally
against one another.
I mean, Jerry Brownlee stood up in the House and said, the reason we're building these highways is because we've got the money. In other words, this is a sort of a weird, you know, cart before the horse situation.
But the government also sees road building as part of economic development.
Yeah, but they never, ever, ever have any proof of this. Mm-hmm. This is just their opinion. They just say all road building leads to, and all the analyses that I've read, and you can see them on our blog, transportblog.co.nz, shows that there's no causal relationship between building highways and GDP growth at all. Now, let me just have a common sense argument about that. If there was a resource, say Northland, for example, was cut off from Auckland, so any produce produced in Northland couldn't reach a major market in Auckland. Say there was not an existing road, there were no sea routes, there wasn't a rail line. Well, then building a new road or some form of contact to Northland could transform that market. You know, it could bring those goods to market that currently can't reach market. There is absolutely no chance that holiday highway will change the ability of anything, especially logs and so forth, and you know, things that are not going to perish in 10 minutes, like getting to Auckland 10 minutes quicker than they can currently.
Which is why it's justifiably called the holiday highway.
Well, it is a holiday highway. We know almost all of the cars turn off. They don't go to Northland at all. It's entirely within the Auckland region.
Some local members say that this is going to improve the situation for the impoverished north.
Well, if you wanted to spend $2 billion, and it'll be more than $2 billion, to improve the impoverished north, you could certainly spend it on the local roads in Northland. You could certainly invest in all sorts of things, in tourism infrastructure and things in Northland. But this is not about Northland at all. It's about getting to Success Way in Omaha without having to give way to another local.
And I wouldn't need to point out, of course, that there is a national MP based up in that particular area. But Patrick, we've started to run out of time. It's been fantastic to talk to you about not only your craft, or your day job, as you like to call it, but the wonderful advocacy work that you're doing around urban form and urban design in Auckland, and it's been fabulous talking to you.
People go and have a look at transportblog.co.nz. It's not just me, I'm just one of five editors, and there's some really good stuff there, and some of them are proper transit wonks and really know what they're talking about.
We'll call them train spotters, and I've been on blog.
Well, they're really not.
And I have been on that blog, and it is a fantastic resource. I really encourage people to visit
booming, transportblog. We're having trouble. We're having to change servers because we're getting flooded at the moment.
It's an excellent sign. We'll see whether or not we can get that happening for Labor's blog. Thank you very much again, Patrick, for talking to us. We're going to finish up today with the wonderful Artisan Guns with their track Autumn, which was an APRA Silver Scroll finalist, and I think you'll see why. Thanks again for joining us. Until next time, this has been Jacinda Ardern, Patrick Reynolds on Red Alert Radio.
The naked autumn trees loom closer with the breeze. The limbs and bones that held our summer shade. I'm restless as the moon that carves us through June. With clouds that stretch and taint his evening gaze. And leaves upon the ground make that old familiar sound, both bold and red like bloodshed in the cold. When everyone's asleep and the house begins to creak, I'm a question with an answer left untold. I'm left untold.
Together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz. /RedAlertRadio.